Warning: this podcast contains foul language, sexual situations, and discussions of drugs and drinking. Yeah.
Welcome to Fuck Shakespeare. All the naughty bits exposed. Our goal is to open your eyes to all the inside info that makes reading Shakespeare way more fun. Any episode might contain dick jokes.
Or essay ideas.
Or anything in between. So listen up.
Hey.
Hi.
Yay. Okay.
I'm Erin.
And I are across the pond from each other again. Oh, yes, I'm Diana. For those of you who are just tuning in now.
You can't tell us apart.
Measure for measures. You can't just jump around.
No. No, yeah. You can't.
Act 4 of Measure for Measure we are tackling today.
Yeah, and we're working with that platform again, but we've got different equipment, so we're going to see how that goes.
Yeah. You sound okay to me, my love.
Well, that's good. All right, let's kick it.
Yeah, so we're on Act 4, and we're going to meet a character that we have not yet, actually two characters today that we have not yet met. We've heard about Mariana, but we haven't met her yet. And so we are traveling to her place, which is called the Moated Grange at St. Luke's. Goodness.
A grange is like a farmhouse, right?
Why does she live in a farmhouse? She was supposed to be a noble lady.
Yeah, well, it's moated. So, you know, that's highfalutin.
Okay. It's got a little wet trench around it. Shall we say? And so that being said, I was just saying to Erin that I was really discovering how much sexy language is in this scene. It's crazy. Because of course they are going to be talking about how to trick Angelo to get into bed with Mariana rather than with Isabella. So they're talking about some bed action. But that part where we hear Isabella explain that to Mariana is done offstage. So that's weird. And there's also magical talk in this scene. The Duke says the word charm. So it's an interesting place. And it begins with music.
Right. And it's weird.
The music is weird. Everything's weird. Everything's weird about it.
Yeah. But okay, so Mariana and a boy, and the boy is singing.
Right.
And the song is not innocent.
Not at all. Hopefully he's not singing to her.
Yeah, it's just bizarre, right?
It is.
But then tell me again what people say about the song.
Well, they say that the song was perhaps added later. So apparently Thomas Middleton was brought in to clean up this script before it was going to be printed in the folio, the first folio, after Shakespeare's death. So maybe Middleton was like, I don't like this beginning. I'm going to change it. And he puts in this song that was actually from another play called The Bloody Brother by Fletcher. And that was a script that apparently the king's men owned the rights to, so they could mess with it if they wanted. They were allowed to use whatever clips.
Samples.
Yeah, they were sampling it. Yes.
They were sampling it.
But Mariana does quickly apologize for the song when the friar, Duke Friar, comes. She's like, I wasn't listening to music to, be joyful. I was listening to it to make me sad. Weird the way music is made to be an uncomfortable thing here.
Yeah.
At the beginning.
Yeah.
And then we're also going to do scene 2 because act 4 scene 1 is very, very short. And act 4 scene 2 is the Duke going to the prison the next morning so that he can be there when the letter from Angelo comes to say, hey, never mind. Don't kill Claudio. It's all fine. That's what he thinks is going to happen.
Well.
Well,
our Duke is not the smartest not the sharpest tool in the shed. Tool.
He's a tool. Yeah. And so that does not happen. And he ends up totally improvising and like realizing, fuck, I got to get back to this Duke business because this is not
this
going
isn't going well.
Yeah. My great experiment is failing big time. Because Angelo, being human, does not decide to perform as expected.
He has free will.
And so everything's not just getting tied up with nice, neat, tidy bow. So, shall we?
Yeah, you're going to do Boy and Duke? And I'll do Mariana and Isabella.
Right. I'll be the boy.
You be the boy. Here you go.
Take away. I feel like I'm singing like, I don't know, David Lee Roth or something. No. And no sweetly worth a swan. So he's already talking about lips.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, take your lips away because they swore falsely to be true. And those eyes, the break of day, lights that do mislead the morn.
Forsworn and mourned.
Yep, got rhyming. They mislead the morn. They make the morning think that the sun has risen. Your eyes are so bright and beautiful. But my kisses bring again, seals of love, but sealed in vain, sealed in vain.
Break off thy song and haste thee quick away. Here comes a man of comfort whose advice hath often stilled my brawling discontent.
And the boy runs out. So that's all we hear from the boy.
Bye-bye, boy.
Bye. Move. Go away.
But like,
what I wonder, yeah, I'm curious.
Exactly. I'm going to ask the same question. When?
The word often?
Yeah.
How many times has he been there disguised as a friar? Is this some shtick that he does?
Some people dress up, some men dress up like women. Some people dress up like a fox or a cat. The Duke dresses up as a friar. It's a sexy thing.
Right. He's probably got one of those leather harnesses on under that friar thing.
Yeah, no kink shaming here, though. Like, if that's his,
no,
if that's
does.
His thing, that's great.
That's his thing. My brawling discontent, so my clamorous crying and screaming.
Maybe the first time he was going out on the town and he heard screeching coming from her house, and you know. He was drawn to
and
the...
He whipped out his friar costume. He just happens to keep it
in his duffel.
Nearby telephone booth.
Super friar.
Super friar.
So now you know I'm going to have to do a super friar video for TikTok.
Yeah, let's do it. Do it.
All right. I cry you mercy, sir, and well could wish you had not found me here so musical. Let me excuse me, and believe me, so my mirth it much displeased, but pleased my woe.
Yeah, so it didn't make me happy.
Happy!
It made me sad.
Yeah.
So I wasn't being frivolous. And I cry you mercy is one of those phrases that Shakespeare uses a lot. It just means I beg your pardon. Mm-hmm. All right? Yeah. And then the Duke parodies or mirrors her rhyming couplet also, because she just had one. 'Tis good, though music oft hath such a charm, to make bad good, and good provoke to harm. There he is, being weird and equivocal again. Right? So he's like, yes, it's good that you said that, because music can sometimes be dangerous. It can make evil people look attractive out on the dance floor.
And he would know.
And then, back to the business. I pray you tell me, hath anybody inquired for me here today? Much upon this time have I promised here to meet.
You much have
upon
not...
this time, meaning right around now. Right around now.
Yeah. You have not been inquired after. I have sat here all day.
So, she hasn't really been busy, has she?
She's just been sitting there listening to the boys sing and weeping.
Weeping.
Like one does when one is heartbroken. You know, how many times did you lay in bed with your transistor radio under your pillow, listening to Top 40 radio and weeping because so-and-so was mean to you or so-and-so didn't like you or, you know.
Right. Exactly. Yes,
exactly.
Notice how the Duke turns to prose right after his rhyming couplet.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He's like shuffling, nervous. What's she going to say? Because this is piece number one. She has to say yes.
Right.
Right. To this thing.
Not that he cares about consent, but.
Just to remind you guys, if you didn't remember from last, he's going to ask her to sleep with Angelo instead of Isabella so that they can get her on board.
But without Angelo's consent.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Let's go on. I could do a soapbox here, but I'm not going to.
Isabella comes in and he says, I do constantly believe you. The time has come even now. I shall crave your forbearance a little. Maybe I will call upon you anon for some advantage to yourself. So he's shuffling her off.
Yeah. I am always bound to you. Bound.
Constantly just means assuredly, like I absolutely believe you. Because here she comes, the person that I was waiting for anyway. All right. So they shuffle Mariana off into the other room. She gets a glimpse of Isabella. She's like, who the fuck is this chick? And then the Duke and Isabella powwow before they are going to break the news. Very well met and welcome. Mm-hmm. What is the news from this good deputy?
And it's not welcome, it's well come.
Yeah, so it's a variation on welcome, but it's written differently and you have to ask yourself why.
Why, right?
So here comes Isabella's description of what Angelo told her. Notice this language. It is just chock full of sex references.
He hath a garden circumured with brick, whose western side is with a vineyard backed, and to that vineyard is a planchet gate that makes his opening with his bigger key. Gate, key, opening, thing you stick in the opening. I don't know.
The key being the dick. That's how he gets in. Circumured just means walled about. And planchet is made out of planks.
This other doth command a little door, which from the vineyard to the garden leads. Ugh.
Yeah. A little door, a little vagina.
Yeah.
Goes to the garden where things grow, you know, a womb.
God. There have I made my promise. Upon the heavy middle of the night to call upon him.
Mm-hmm. But shall you on your knowledge find this way?
I have ta'en a due and wary note upon't, with whispering and most guilty diligence, in action of all precept, he did show me the way twice o'er.
Yeah, so doesn't that sound like lovers meeting secretly, secret trysts, right? Mm-hmm. Whispering and guiltiness, right? Wariness, wearing, being attentive, you know, paying attention to all those details, right?
And he had to show her the way twice.
Yeah.
Just to be sure.
Precept.
Yeah.
With explanatory gestures. So he's like, here's where we're going to do this thing.
You can't see what Diana's doing, but she's doing the fuckity fuck hand motion. Okay.
Are there no other tokens between you agreed concerning her observance? Is there no other special secret handshakes or...
agreed as in agreed.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Got it.
Observance, the condition that she is to observe. So like, when she gets there, does she have to say anything else, like a special word to enter? You
know? Password. Yes. The password is dick.
Speak friend and enter.
Isabella. No, none, but only a repair in the dark, and that I have possessed him my most I don't understand what that means.
And then I have possessed him, meaning like I've informed him. I've informed him that the most I can stay is very short, can be but brief.
Oh, okay. No, none, but only a repair in the dark. And that I have possessed him, my most stay can be but brief. For I have made him know I have a servant comes with me along that stays upon me, whose persuasion is I come about my brother.
Right? Mm. That just sounds like wrong.
Mm-hmm. Oh, stays upon me, I come.
Yeah, right? A repair in the dark is a coming in the dark. She's going to arrive when it's deep darkness. I've possessed him. So we have the word charm. We have the word possessed, right? Mm-hmm. So we have magical language here. And I can only stay a short while. And there's someone coming with me. So I imagine Isabella is coming in a cloak as the servant. And
going with
Mariana, right? To show her the way. And she's waiting for Isabella in disguise / Mariana to come out. Right? But I love stays upon me. It's a threesome. She's waiting for me. And then come about my brother. We're going to have a threesome with my brother.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God. Yikes. And Duke, 'tis well borne up. You've sustained our ruse really well, but also borne up like he's on top. I have not yet made known to Mariana a word of this. What ho, within, come forth. So he calls her back out, and then he talks to her. I pray you, be acquainted with this maid. She comes to do you good.
I do desire the like.
Acquainted is like intimate, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Be intimate with this maid. So now he's like putting women together to have sex and watch them. It's creepy. She comes to do you good, and then Isabella answers, I desire,
yeah.
Right? And then the Duke says to Mariana, who's probably looking like, what do you want from me, you two weird people, right? And he's like trying to calm her. Do you persuade yourself that I respect you?
Are you convinced that I respect you? Yeah. Mariana, a good friar, I know you do and have found it.
Take then this your companion by the hand, who hath a story ready for your ear. I shall attend your leisure, but make haste. The vaporous night approaches.
Wilt please you walk aside?
So then the two women shuffle off into the next room, right? Whatever happens in the next room, very interesting, but we don't get to see it. So your companion, your partner, but companion is also a bed companion, right?
Mm-hmm.
Your ear is slang for vagina. Your leisure, I'm going to wait while you guys do your thing. And then the Duke has this weird speech because he has to have something to fill the time while Mariana and Isabella are talking on the side, right?
Yes.
But also, a lot of scholars say that this speech was inserted later and that maybe it was stolen from a different part of the play. So it's a little strange. And it also sounds like Angelo in some ways.
Huh.
It sounds like a repeat of his whole talking about the people coming thronging to him to love him, but they stifling him, right?
Like yes.
He was talking about his heart. And the blood rushing to his heart
when yes.
he was about to meet Isabella. So it sounds very much like that speech. So it's a weird one. But there had to be something here, right?
I suppose.
Oh, place and greatness. Millions of false eyes are stuck upon thee. Volumes of report run with these false and most contrarious quests upon thy doings. Thousand escapes of wit make thee the father of their idle dreams and rack thee in their fancies. So he's like, it sucks to be someone so important and always looked at because people are looking at you. Their report, and that means their gossip, runs hostile. Contrarious is hostile. Thousand escapes of wit, their flights of fancy, you know, like they're imbuing you with all the things they imagine about leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just like stretch you out and distort you and torture you. You know, the
you can't be who you really are because they don't see you for who you are. They only see the leader.
And they make up ideas about who they think you might be.
Yeah. Right.
He is definitely not who they think he might be. Right.
Nope.
And they re-enter and he says, oh, welcome. How agreed?
Isabella, she'll take the enterprise upon her father if you advise it.
It is not my consent, but my entreaty, too.
Isabella, little have you to say when you depart from him, but soft and low, remember now my brother. These are all shared lines.
Yeah. And even she shares a line with Mariana then.
Yeah.
There, Mariana finishes her thought, right?
Right. It is not my consent, but my entreaty, too. Little have you to say when you depart from him, but soft and low, remember now my brother. Mariana, fear me not.
So not my consent, meaning not only. I don't only agree, but I also am trying to encourage you in this, right? And
yeah.
Isabella's finishing off her instructions there, right?
Right. You don't have to say anything, right, but just say softly, because you don't want him to hear your voice is not the same as my voice.
Right. And remember, and now that I did this thing for you, you remember my brother, Claudio. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting, though, because Mariana also had a brother who went to the bottom of the sea in the boat.
Right.
So that's an interesting parallel as well. And then the Duke, they're just, you don't really get to hear what Mariana thinks about this whole thing. That's all you hear is fear me not. Like, don't worry, I'm not going to do the wrong thing, is what she's saying, right?
Yeah.
But it seems like they're worried that she's not convinced, because he's also still convincing her here.
It feels gross that a nun and a friar are, you know, this is gross.
Are coercing her to do, yeah.
Coercing her, right?
Yeah.
That's what it feels like.
For sure.
Ugh. They say it's in your best interest if you go with our coercive idea, right?
It's good for me. It's good for everyone. Mm-hmm.
And we're holy.
Sure.
But they're not. They're the opposite of holy. But anyway, yeah.
So, Duke, nor gentle daughter, fear you not at all. He is your husband on a pre-contract. To bring you thus together, 'tis no sin, sith that the justice of your title to him doth flourish the deceit. Come, let us go. Our corns to reap, for yet our tithes to sow. So he has the word deceit in there, right? Mm-hmm. It's not cool. It's not good. But he's trying to convince her. He's your husband on a pre-contract. Like, so he was contracted to you before. But the same is said of Claudio. Claudio and Julietta had the same pre-contract.
Right.
And yet theirs is illegal. So, And flourish the deceit just means justify, but it also has that sense of someone signing it off, right?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. And that last line, it's like a platitude, a weird one. Our grain is still to be reaped, right? And the tithe was the extra grain that they grew to give to the church so they could feed all the monks and everything. The meaning is we have a lot of work to do before we can enjoy the fruits of our labor.
Yeah.
But that also sort of infers fruits of our labor infers that Mariana potentially getting pregnant, right?
Yeah, right.
Which would be a side effect for her. What if she gets pregnant and he still says, no, I don't want to do this.
So yeah.
She's in a very dangerous, risky place.
Yes, she is. And these non-holy people are pushing it.
Yeah. Not cool. Just gets messier and messier from here on in. So here we go, back to the prison. Provost and Pompey.
You be Pompey, I'll be provost.
Okay.
Come hither, sirrah. Can you cut off a man's head?
First of all, that's really abrupt. It's a hell of an entrance line.
Yeah. How are you with killing someone? Yeah. Cutting off his head.
And Pompey's like, if the man be a bachelor, sir, I can. But if he be a married man, he's his wife's head, and I can never cut off a woman's head.
Ha, 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 ha.
So he's his wife's head. He's the head of the family, the head of the household. So I can't do her that disservice, but a woman's head is also?
Maidenhead. Virginity.
Yeah.
So provost. Yeah, provost. Come, sir, leave me your snatches and yield me a direct answer.
He means cut the shit, but
yeah,
we have Maidenhead and then we have snatches.
Yeah, right. Tomorrow morning are to die Claudio and Barnardine. Here is in our prison a common executioner who in his office lacks a helper. If you will take it on you to assist him, it shall redeem you from your gyves. If not, you shall have your full time of imprisonment and your deliverance with an unpitied whipping, for you have been a notorious bawd.
Here's a common executioner, a public executioner. He's like not the one that the kings use and stuff, you know?
He's just a guy.
He's just a dude. And in his office, in his duties, he needs some help. And if you
got to hold people down when you chop off their heads.
I guess, and muscle them into place, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you do it, it will redeem you from your gyves, which means your shackles. So you'll get an early release, perhaps. If not, forget it. You will be released with a pitiless whipping.
Yeah. Severe.
Yeah. Terrible. Sir, I have been an unlawful bawd, time out of mind, but yet I will be content to be a lawful hangman. I would be glad to receive some instruction from my fellow partner.
What ho! Abhorson! Where's Abhorson? There!
Don't you love this name? Oh my God.
I do. I love the character too. Abhorson and Barnardine are like two of my favorite characters in the whole play.
So it's a contraction of like abhorred whoreson, right?
Yeah.
Hated bastard.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just to explain, time out of mind means since before I can remember. So he's been a bawd his whole life. And it must take him by surprise to hear the provost yelling Abhorson. Like, what? What? Really? Is that his name? Oh, my God. So here comes Abhorson.
Do you call, sir? Sirrah, here's a fellow will help you tomorrow in your execution. If you think it meet, compound with him by the year and let him abide here with you. If not, use him for the present and dismiss him. He cannot plead his estimation with you. He hath been a bawd. A bawd, sir? Fie upon him! He will discredit our mystery!
Tomorrow he's going to help you. I like, in your execution, meaning in the completion of your tasks, but it also means in chopping off the guy's head. And so he's like, if you like the idea, compound, which means come to an agreement, but it also means like get together.
Yeah. You can keep working together.
You can work together. You guys will make a beautiful couple.
Yeah.
Get together with him for a yearly salary, you know, agree upon a yearly salary and he can hang out here. Otherwise, just use him for this one, this job, for the present, the current job, and then let him go. But then he cannot plead his estimation. He doesn't have any references or any prior experience, but you know, to what? And Morrison's like, well, fucking no, I don't want him.
I don't want a bawd. This is skilled work.
Yeah. Mystery is skilled craft.
Go to, sir. You weigh equally. A feather will turn the scale. That's not nice. The provost is being nasty. He's like, Morrison, you're just as bad as he is.
Yeah. You're just the same. But a feather will turn the scale is such an interesting phrase because you know the Egyptian god Anubis?
Yes.
He weighs your heart against a feather. And if your heart is light, if your heart is lighter, you go to heaven.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so it's kind of a cool ancient reference there. Okay, Pompey. Pray, sir, by your good favor, for surely, sir, a good favor you have, but that you have a hanging look. Do you call, sir, your occupation a mystery?
Aye, sir, a mystery.
By your good favor, meaning by your leave, but then he uses the word good favor, like you have a good face.
Yes.
Except
you're handsome.
Buttering him up a little because he knows he's the executioner. He's like, yikes. But you have a hanging look, which is fun. You look a little sad. Or you also have the look of a hangman, or you have the look of a guy who doesn't get it up anymore. Hanging look. And so he's like, why do you call this job a mystery? And so then Pompey's going to make his own equivalent to that. Painting, sir, I have heard say, is a mystery. And your whores, sir, being members of my occupation, using painting, do prove my occupation a mystery. But what mystery there should be in hanging, if I should be hanged, I cannot imagine.
Sir, it is a mystery.
Morrison's like, don't fuck with me, just accept.
But I love painting, sir.
Yeah.
They don't mean painting as in art painting.
Nope.
Painting as in putting on makeup.
Mm-hmm. Makes it a mystery, makes, you know, because it makes people exotic looking where they were plain before, right? And so he's saying that whores, being part of the sex trade, like me, use painting, and they're exotic, and they become a mystery. So my job is a craft, too, because I'm by association, right? And then he's like, but I don't know about you. For the life of me, if I should be hanged, is like, for the life of me, I can't imagine why your occupation is a mystery. since abortion just continues in this case, Pompey's like, okay, proof.
Every true man's apparel fits your thief. If it be too little for your thief, your true man thinks it big enough. If it be too big for your thief thinks it little enough. So, every true man's apparel fits your thief.
What do you make of that?
I don't know. I mean, he's just, right? I mean, it sounds good.
Yeah, he's like every true man's circles around him.
Yeah, fits your thief, right? Every thief can wear every non-thief's clothing.
Yeah.
Because a thief will take anything, right?
Sure. Yeah.
If it's too little in size or in amount that it's worth, your non-thief thinks it's fine. It's big enough.
Since it's big enough, but it's also a big loss to him, right?
Oh,
no matter,
I see.
No matter if it's too little for the thief, the guy that he stole it from, it's a big deal because he stole his clothes, right?
If it be too big for your thief thinks, oh, so if it's too much for a thief to deserve, your thief still thinks it's not enough.
Yeah. So, ergo... right?
Because the thief will take anything.
So he only gets to say this piece before the provost comes back in. But you could imagine perhaps that then he's going to equate himself to the thief, right? And that thieves are members of his occupation because he steals life. An executioner, without a person to execute, which is the thieves, in the same way that Pompey is making the association of himself and the whores, even though he doesn't do that job.
Right.
Right.
I see. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
Provost, are you agreed?
Sir, I will serve him, for I do find your hangman is a more penitent trade than your bawd. He doth oftener ask forgiveness. So the hangman always begged pardon of the person he was about
before
to
he killed.
Execute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You, sirrah, provide your block and your axe tomorrow 4:00.
Come on, bawd, I will instruct thee in my trade. Follow.
I do desire to learn, sir, and I hope, if you have occasion to use me for your own turn, you shall find me yare. For truly, sir, for your kindness, I owe you a good turn.
Yeah, so for your own turn, you know how Pompey loves making these little puns, you know?
Yeah.
So if when the time comes that you need an executioner, I hope you find me ready and willing. Yare is like nimble and ready. And for truly, sir, I owe you a good turn, like a roll in the hay. Right.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Yare is in the sailing term, like true.
Yes.
Right.
Yep.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And well set up. And
yeah.
Right.
I just remember in Philadelphia Story, my, she was yar.
Yar.
Okay. Call hither Barnardine and Claudio.
Pompey and a Porson exit to get the prisoners.
Yeah. The one has my pity, not a jot the other, being a murderer, though he were my brother. Look, here's the warrant, Claudio, for thy death. 'Tis now dead midnight, and by 8 tomorrow thou must be made immortal. Where's Barnardine?
So they ran to get the prisoners, and Claudio comes in, only to hear again that he has to die tomorrow.
Right.
That tomorrow just keeps getting, it's like Macbeth. Right.
Tomorrow and tomorrow. Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And then he's like, okay, one prisoner came to hear me, but where's the other one? Claudio. As fast locked up in sleep as guiltless labor, when it lies starkly in the traveler's bones, he will not wake.
Who can do good on him?
Like, who the fuck can help this man? This man is never going to be a good person. Right? Starkly just means stiffly, and traveler is actually the travailer, like the worker.
Work. Yeah. So that's from the French.
He's locked in sleep like a hardworking person is just, can't get up because their bones are so stiff.
Well, go prepare yourself.
Knocking. Knock, 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 knock.
But hark, what noise? Heaven give your spirits comfort, by and by. I hope it is some pardon or reprieve for the most gentle Claudio. And in comes the Duke. Welcome, Father.
The best and wholesomest spirits of the night envelop you, good provost. Who called here of late?
None, since the curfew rung.
Not Isabel?
No.
They will, then, ere it be long.
What comfort is for Claudio?
There's some in hope.
It is a bitter deputy.
Not so, not so. His life is paralleled, even with the stroke and line of his great justice. He doth with holy abstinence subdue that in himself which he spurs on his power to qualify in others. Were he mealed with that which he corrects, then were he tyrannous. But this being so, he's just.
Okay, but so he's just, I mean, basically, he's, I mean, if anybody knows anything, he just threw Angela under the bus.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody knows, but, you know, come on.
Nobody knows yet, but he keeps setting that up, and he did it to Aeschylus too, right? If he proves to have the same crime, then it's the curtains for him, right? So that's basically what he's saying here too to the provost. So he's kind of setting everybody up to remember that Angelo tried to punish Claudio for this, and now he can't get away with this shit, right?
Yeah.
I like there's some in hope. So some of us hope that Claudio is going to be fine, right? Mm-hmm. Some of us know something. His life is paralleled, so he's performing according to expectations, right? Even with the stroke and line of his great justice, even every signature, every, you know, he's towing the line with what he has said he was going to do. He doth with holy abstinence, notice the word, the sex word, subdue, another sex word, that in himself, which he spurs on with his power, that he's pushing down the thing that he is urging with his power to punish other people for. And then were he mealed with, that's an interesting, if we ever were found out that he was nourished by the same thing that he has been correcting, then we could call him a tyrant.
Right.
Right. But right now he's acting like a justice.
Knock, knock, knock.
Now are they come. This is a gentle provost. Seldom when the steeled gaoler is the friend of men. So the provost exits when he hears the knocking again this time. And it's the chance for the Duke to make this observation about the provost. He's like, it's unusual when the warden is so kind to his prisoners and he cares about them. So this is the only thing I think that in his disguise, he actually gets a good view of the provost and knows who to reward, right?
Knock, knock, knock.
How now? What noise? That spirit's possessed with haste that wounds the unsisting postern with these strokes. So it's like, goodness, this person's in a hurry. Unsisting is just unresisting, and a postern is a small door, but it's also a butt.
Yeah, posterior.
Your posterior.
And that strokes, butt strokes. And here comes the provost. Yeah. There he must stay until the officer arrives to let him in. He is called up.
Who's called up?
Claudio.
The porter.
Oh, the porter.
The porter has been roused to go open the door.
Oh, okay.
It's a whole process. They got to listen to all this knocking until the right guy goes to the door.
Okay.
And the Duke. Have you no countermand for Claudio yet, but he must die tomorrow?
None, sir, none.
Like that, little pun. There's a nun coming. Who is going to help? As near the dawning, provost, as it is, you shall hear more ere morning.
Happily, you something know. Yet I believe there comes no countermand. No such example have we. Besides, upon the very siege of justice, Lord Angelo hath to the public ear professed the contrary.
Interesting how they're using French here. Travail, and we have siege, which is a seat. Le siège. Angelo has made a public statement that he would not pardon Claudio. So the provost doesn't think that he will change his mind, no matter what. Right.
And then a messenger comes in. This is his lordship's man.
And here comes Claudio's pardon.
Messenger. My lord hath sent you this note, and by me this further charge, that you swerve not from the smallest article of it, neither in time, matter, or other circumstance. Good morrow, for as I take it, it is almost day. Provost, I shall obey him.
And Duke aside, this is his pardon, purchased by such sin, for which the pardoner himself is in. Hence hath offence his quick celerity, when it is born in high authority. All these rhyming couplets.
Mm.
So he's excited, and he's like, yeah, yeah, this is going to work. It's going to be great. It's going to be great. He's purchased, right, achieved this pardon with sin. But the kind of sin that the pardoner, Angelo, is also in, right?
Mm-hmm.
Quick celerity is lively speed, but it also might be a quick end, right? Quick end to the offense. When it is born, harbored in high authority. So he has to agree to cancel Claudio's execution because he is harboring the same offense, right?
Mm-hmm.
When vice makes mercy, mercy so extended that for the false love is the offender friended. Now, sir, what news?
I told you, Lord Angelo, belike thinking me remiss in mine office, awakens me with this unwanted putting on, methinks strangely, for he hath not used it before.
Maybe Angelo's thinking me remiss? That
I'm like I'm not going to actually do this?
Yeah.
He's never checked up on me like this before.
Yeah, and he's pressuring me. There's this putting on is the word, means pressure. So the Duke's like, what do you mean? What do you mean? Pray you, let's hear.
Provost, whatsoever you may hear to the contrary, let Claudio be executed by 4 o'clock and in the afternoon, Barnardine. For my better satisfaction, let me have Claudio's head sent me by 5. Let this be duly performed, with a thought that more depends on it than we must yet deliver. Thus, fail not to do your office as you will answer it at your peril. What say you to this?
So he's like laying it out, right? Claudio has to be executed and bring me his head.
Head.
An hour later, for my assurance. My satisfaction is my assurance, but my satisfaction, as you were saying, is also a sadist. I want to see that bloody head. I want to sit on my dining room table.
Yeah.
And more depends on it than I can declare.
Right.
Deliver is declare. Yeah. Then I can let you know. And the Duke answers the question with a question. What is that Barnardine who is to be executed in the afternoon?
A bohemian born, but here nursed up and bred. One that is a prisoner 9 years old.
Doesn't mean he's a child.
It means he's been there.
Yeah. For 9 years. So he was born in Bohemia. Bohemia is a country that we also hear about in Winter's Tale, which is also going to be written around this time. But he was raised here, and he's been in prison for 9 years. How came it that the absent Duke had not either delivered him to his liberty or executed him? I have heard it was ever his manner to do so.
His friends still wrought reprieves for him, and indeed, his fact, till now in the government of Lord Angelo, came not to an undoubtful proof.
So Barnardine's friends were lobbying for him, and his fact is his crime. So they didn't actually make a clear...
They haven't proven it.
Again.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's been sitting in 9 years in prison without a real conviction. That's not okay either.
Nope.
So your government sucks, Duke Vincentio. It is now apparent?
Most manifest, and not denied by himself.
Hath he borne himself penitently in prison? How seems he to be touched?
A man that apprehends death no more dreadfully, but as a drunken sleep, careless, reckless and fearless of what's past, present, or to come, insensible of mortality and desperately mortal.
So seems he be touched. How has he been affected by his correction, quote unquote?
And we've already talked about the penal system, and there is no such thing as correction in the penal system. Sorry.
But certainly not in this time period either.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Dreadfully is like, he doesn't have dread. No, he's no more fearful of death than he is of drunken sleep.
Which is how he lives his life.
Yeah. Careless. That means he doesn't have care. He doesn't have any anxiety.
Okay, well, editor's note here, guys. We had a technical difficulty, and my computer just shut down entirely. So we were not able to finish the episode, so I'm going to finish it for you alone at this point. My apologies. Aaron and I will get back to you next week. And also my apologies for getting this episode out so very late. I am starting school, and I'm completely overwhelmed. Sorry, that was my little aside. Okay, so continuing with Act 4, Scene 2, we were talking about the provost's words where he said that Barnardine is careless and reckless and fearless. Reckless meaning like reckoning. So he's not even thinking about what is going to come or what is in the present. He's just doesn't even care from day to day what's going on in his world. And Duke Vincentio, he wants advice. That means he needs convincing. Provost, he will hear none. He hath evermore had the liberty of the prison. Give him leave to escape hence, he would not. Drunk many times a day, if not many days, entirely drunk. We have very oft waked him, as if to carry him to execution, and showed him a seeming warrant for it. It hath not moved him at all. Like, he does not care. You can wake him up, you can tell him he's about to die. He doesn't give two shits. So, Vincentio, more of him anon. There is written in your brow, Provost, honesty and constancy. If I read it not truly, my ancient skill beguiles me. But in the boldness of my cunning, I will lay myself in hazard. Claudio, whom here you have warrant to execute, is in no greater forfeit to the law than Angelo, who hath sentenced him. To make you understand this in a manifested effect, I crave but 4 days' respite, for the which you are to do me both a present and a dangerous courtesy. All right, so things are not going according to plan, so now the Duke has got to make some shit up. Now he's got to, plan B. What the fuck? Where am I going to go with this? So my ancient skill beguiles me, deceives me. Well, of course it does, because it is not your ancient skill. You are not a fucking friar. Anyway, in the boldness of my cunning, I will lay myself. I'm going to take a chance and tell you something that I probably should not have told you. So he's telling him that Claudio and Angelo have committed the same crime, right? And he's asking the provost for 4 days to be able to prove it to you. And you will have to do an immediate thing for me right now that's a little bit risky. So present is immediate, dangerous, risky. Provost, pray, sir, in what? Duke, in the delaying death. He wants him to put off Claudio's death. Provost, alack, how may I do it? Having the hour limited and an express command under penalty to deliver his head in the view of Angelo. I may make my case as Claudio's to cross this in the smallest. He's obviously unhappy with that idea. The hour is limited. That means it's specified. And I may make my case. I might as well make my own coffin alongside Claudio's if I try to do this, cross this, meaning go contrary to. Vincentio, by the vow of mine order, I warrant you, if my instructions may be your guide, let this Barnardine be this morning executed and his head borne to Claudio. So he thinks he's come up with a great plan, right? I warrant you, I guarantee you against harm by the clothes that I wear, by the friar garments. And so he's saying, we'll just take Barnardine's head to Angelo. Provost, Angelo hath seen them both and will discover the favor. So again, we have the word favor, which means face. He will recognize the face. Duke, oh, death's a great disguiser, and you may add to it. Shave the head and tie the beard and say it was the desire of the penitent to be so bared before his death. You know the course is common. If anything fall to you upon this, more than thanks and good fortune, by the saint whom I profess, I will plead against it with my life. So, no, you can do this, shave his head, whatever. Say that the person being put to death, i.e. Claudio, wanted this done before he was going to die. The course is common. That means the practice is a common thing. Oftentimes they did that to prisoners, removed all their hair before they executed them. It made it easier for the jobbing. And then by the saint whom I profess. So is that by Saint Francis? Did he forget his name? Because he's not really a Franciscan friar. He doesn't know what the fuck he's doing. He's like ad-libbing right now. Provost. Pardon me, good father. It is against my oath. Duke. Were you sworn to the Duke or to the deputy? Provost. To him and to his substitutes. Duke. You will think you have made no offense. If the Duke avouch the justice of your dealing, will you be okay with this if the Duke confirms that you acted correctly? Avouch is confirm. Provost. But what likelihood is in that? Duke. Not a resemblance, but a certainty. Yet since I see you fearful that neither my coat, integrity, nor persuasion can with ease attempt you, I will go further than I meant to pluck all fears out of you. Look you, sir, here is the hand and seal of the Duke. You know the character, I doubt not, and the signet is not strange to you? Provost, I know them both. So, not a resemblance, not a mere possibility, but a certainty, okay? And then he's going to pull out one more thing to convince him, because he can see that the provost is really not okay with this at all. And so he uses the word attempt you, which means tempt. So here again, not acting like a friar. That's not what they're supposed to do. He's very sus here. So he whips out some paper, perhaps, and he says, here is the hand and seal of the Duke. So the handwriting and the seal in wax. And he asks the provost, you know the character. Do you know the handwriting? You recognize it. And the signet, which is the seal. And the provost would have received many such papers from the Duke to carry, you know, to give him leave to carry out his offices. And so he does say, yeah, I recognize these things. The Duke. The contents of this is the return of the Duke. You shall anon overread it at your pleasure, where you shall find within these 2 days he will be here. This is a thing that Angelo knows not, for he this very day receives letters of strange tenor, perchance of the Duke's death, perchance entering into some monastery, but by chance nothing of what is writ. Look, the unfolding star calls up the shepherd. Put not yourself into amazement how these things should be. All difficulties are but easy when they are known. Call your executioner, and off with Barnardine's head. I will give him a present shrift and advise him for a better place. Yet you are amazed, but this shall absolutely resolve you. Come away, it is almost clear dawn. So really, he's in this crazy hurry to just make everything work out for himself. But it's really not working out, for fuck's sake, right? So there's a discrepancy now, even with above, he said, I need 4 days. And now he says the Duke will be back in 2 days. So he's really shuffling. And he's saying that Angelo doesn't know that the Duke's returning, because Angelo's going to get some different letters that say maybe the Duke is dead, or maybe he went into a monastery, or I don't know. And then the unfolding star is the morning star. So he's saying, hey, look, shit, morning star's up. It's the star that tells the shepherd that it's time to let the sheep out. Okay? And so he's like, don't stand there gawking like an idiot. You know, we're going to do this thing. Just take off Barnardine's head. It's all going to be fine. And then here he does again that thing where he's going to go and take the dying person's confession, which is really not okay, as Aaron and I have repeatedly emphasized. So present shrift, he's going to take his immediate confession and advise him for a better place. I'm going to school him to get ready for heaven. And then he says, yet you are amazed. Like, you're still standing there. Come on. You know, this letter is going to absolutely convince you that it's all fine. So he's going to let the provost read that letter. Now, if this letter was not addressed to Angelo, who is it addressed to? So there's a lot of mysteries. Talk about mysteries, Abhorson. There's a lot of mysteries here at the end of this scene. And we're just going to have to leave you with that cliffhanger, because the scene is over. And unfortunately, I don't have my friend Aaron here to wish you farewell and to have a last few thoughts. But basically, the Duke is one dodgy fucker. And hopefully he will get his comeuppance, but I don't know. He's one that Shakespeare lets him get away with it in some way. And I love it because it leaves us wondering, who really are the bad people in this play and who are the good people? All of those things in quotes. It's wonderful when we don't know. And this is a really great case for that negative capability that I was talking about, where we have to allow all things to exist at the same time. So the Duke can be a well-meaning person, perhaps, on the outside, but he does some really uncomfortable shit in the middle there. And Angelo can be, you know, a villain looking like on the outside, but he might have been well-meaning, well-intentioned to begin with. So isn't that great? Humans are flawed. And that's what makes them interesting. We don't like goody-goody two-shoes all the time, and we don't like horrible, horrible mass murderers. It's nice to have a bit of both, I guess. Where am I going with this? I don't know. I got no errand to steer me, so sorry about that. And go watch TikTok. All right. Love you guys. See you next time.
For additional fun shit from Fuck Shakespeare, you can head to our website at fckshakespeare.com.
Or find us on Instagram at fckshakespeare.
If you are enjoying this podcast,
you could support us for as little as 99 cents per month. Just click the support button on the page on Spotify or Anchor.
Tell your friends.